All right, well, good evening. We'll go ahead and get started. We saw some of you that were just coming in, and we thought, well, we'll just wait. And yeah, so everybody starts at the beginning. So thank you for coming out tonight to this public meeting for the county's comprehensive plan update and draft environmental impact statement. My name is Ben Floyd, and I'm with White Bluffs Consulting. My wife and I own this business. Laura is here up front. And we live here in the Tri-Cities, and this is our second time going through the comprehensive plan update for Benton County, and we've done quite a bit of work on this similar work in the area over the last several years. So maybe we go to the first slide. I thought I had an agenda, but maybe I put it out. There we go. Let's do that. Let's also introduce our county team that we're working with that is guiding the overall process. Oh, Greg.
My name is David Hooper. I'm the planning manager of Benton County.
And my name is Brittany Merrill. I am in the office.
And she also keeps the website up to date.
Yes. Do the best of my ability with the changes that we've had, but yes, I'll take it from the website. I am Andrew Watson.
And then we also have Selene. Does everybody know Selene? She's here for Spanish interpretation and just general pleasant smile that is a welcoming face.
And I like to promote also.
And you like to promote. Yep, she's done a lot of help. She did a lot of distribution of the flyers for the meeting tonight, translated into Spanish for us. She's been great. So I did want to ask, and I talked to you when you first came in, but are there anything in particular that you want to hear about, share, talk about, just briefly kind of topics that you're most interested in tonight?
The overlaying for the siting. Facilities and exchange.
Okay. Okay. So the energy, okay, overlay. All right. Anything else? So I know climate is also a topic. Critical areas and the shrub set mitigation. Okay. So what I have is a series of slides that highlight the comprehensive plan updates, highlight the development regulation updates, some of which we've worked on and some of which the county planning team has worked on, and then the draft environmental impact statement, and we'll conclude with where do we go from here. Yes, sir.
I'm gonna add just one other one, and that's just the waste management stuff in general.
Okay.
So divvy up.
Okay, we do have solid waste management included in the plan by reference primarily. So we can take comments and share those with others as appropriate. So great, thank you. All right, so next slide. So this is pretty hard to read, but this PowerPoint will be out on the website so you can look at it in more detail. This just gives you some of the changes, a summary of some of the changes that we're making to the land use designations. And the land use designations are the overarching designation that then gets drilled down into specific zoning regulations and zoning districts for the land use. So we're changing some parcels from Growth Management Act agriculture to rural industrial, to rural commercial, and rural remote, which is like a 1 per 20 acre. And then we're changing some industrial to rural remote and public, and also some rural remote to open space public. So it's kind of a mix of uses. Some are going to higher intensity uses, some are going to lower intensity uses. And there's actually two different alternatives. This is just one of the alternatives to give you an idea of what's changing. The other alternative has even more land going into industrial. Next slide. One of the new areas that we've, well, it's not a new area, but an area where there are new requirements is in housing. And so in the next slide, it shows some of the requirements. So there's a new goal for the Growth Management Act to plan for and accommodate affordable housing to all economic segments. We do a really good job in the county of planning for people that are higher income, middle and higher income. And so the lower income households have a tougher time finding affordable homes. And part of that is not just inventory here, but also national, you know, policies and such that that make it more difficult. So we consider all of that information as we do our planning. We also have to demonstrate that there's enough land to be able to provide for housing in the future, and also make provisions for like adequate housing needs. So we need emergency housing. We need housing that has permanent assistive care. And we also want to consider things like, are there racially disparate impacts? And is there an opportunity for displacement with like projects that the county has planned that could, you know, focus an area, excuse me, that focus an area that, in an area that maybe higher impacted of a ethnic group or a lower income area. So we consider all of that. One thing that we've learned is that, and it's pretty clear when you think about like affordable housing, and people often may not have their own transportation, and so they're relying on like transit, and services have to be close by and all of that as well. And so it turns out that the county out in the unincorporated area is not really a great place to put affordable housing because you're so far away from the services and such. And so we actually, the county's target is just to go above that 80% median household income for housing for those that have that household income and higher. And the lower income bands are actually go into the city along with emergency shelters. Next slide. Oh, yes, you can ask questions as we go along.
So lower income housing, presumably that would be higher density.
Higher density, exactly. Which also, that's another reason why it makes more sense to be in the cities, yeah. Right? Because you have water and sewer as well. Medical, everything's closer. Yes, sir.
Just a real quick one. I've seen been attending the comp plans city level.
Yes.
And they've got, you know, your goal of how many people you have to accommodate. And the deal also being at the next slide up.
Yep.
They also have a house group emergency housing allocation.
Yes.
I wanted to point out that everything else is in units and those allocations are in beds.
Oh.
So I just think that we should be consistent on that.
That's a really
transparent.
Yes. Yes. So you're right. The others are housing units,
right.
And the housing allocation for the emergency housing is beds. Yep, it's for individuals. It's basically, it's beds or individuals.
Yeah,
great. So that shows you, like, we took all of the growth for the county as a whole. So what's happening in the cities, what's happening in the unincorporated area, and then we allocated by these different income bands. And you can see for the unincorporated rural, the bottom row before the total, that's Benton County. And so you can see the county is planning for 384 units in the 80 to 100% of the area median income, 435 for 120%, and then 4,000 for greater than 120% median household income. And we've got the capacity to support that growth.
So this is increase?
Yes.
In the future.
This is, yeah, for the next 20 years. And technically, our planning for this started in 2020. So it's 2020 to 2047. That's what these allocations cover.
That period. Yeah, there's this new city that's planned north of Red Mountain.
New city planned north of Red Mountain? So that's part of West Richland.
Part of West Richland.
So it's a master planning effort that's part of West Richland. Okay. Yep.
That's it. It's Kings Ranch.
I'm not sure.
Not sure. So anyway, that just shows you Benton City, Kennewick, Prosser, Richland, West Richland, and then Unincorporated County, and then the totals. So we had a group process with the cities to develop these allocations, agree on the allocations, and then everybody's pulling, well, this overall table, but then specific strategies into their plans for how they're addressing housing. And if you look at the draft comprehensive plan that's on the website, in the housing section, you'll see it's been substantially updated, like maybe the most rewrites out of all the elements of the plan.
And unincorporated includes Findlay, right?
And unincorporated includes Findlay, it includes Whitstrand, Plymouth, Patterson, and then everywhere else. It's basically everywhere outside of the cities.
So how many
books are there? I mean, it fluctuates, right? I don't know what that number, I don't remember it off the top of my head.
I think it's a hard one to count.
It is. And there he is. I just don't remember exactly what it is. But so it's not just in the emergency housing allocation, the homeless. The homeless would also come in the permanent housing, the permanent supportive housing. So that's where you have someone that might live there that's also working with a caseworker and has, you know, maybe some ongoing treatment or other support that they're receiving to try and help them get to a point where they can afford their own housing.
The tip that having enough housing to accommodate more people.
Exactly. Well, so yeah, so we've got a growth forecast that goes along with this. And then these allocations are based upon that growth forecast and the associated housing units that are needed.
I think they're down to breaking it out progressive.
It's a progressive approach, and it's also required.
Yeah.
It's part of the process that we had to do.
What is PSH?
Permanent supportive housing. So again, that's an example where someone's maybe assigned to a caseworker and they're living in a group home and they have some like medical needs that they need attended to. So, and there's lots of different housing options besides just a group home. That's the example that came to mind. Great questions. Next slide. So on the natural resources front, we've also been pretty busy. And no matter what we do, it's never good enough for a few people in this room.
That's always
going to
be the case.
I know. I'm just having a little fun with my friends. So we have done quite a bit of work. We've updated the agricultural description of agricultural uses in the county. We've got more detail on mineral, mining, lands, and resources. We added a reference to groundwater nitrate action plan. So there was an assessment that was done and then the last update, and now we're doing and then there's been an action plan. And so that's incorporated. The county has a rural water supply program. So for the part of the county that drains to the Yakima River, so think about, you know, like between Benton City and Prosser, and even between like before West Richland, where someone is drilling a well that might intercept water that would normally go to the Yakima River, the county has to mitigate for that impact to those flows. And so they have a rural water supply program, and that program was updated to reflect kind of the latest findings of that program and how it works. We also updated and expanded the discussion about habitats and species in the county, and particularly conditions for shrub step. So shrub step is sagebrush, grasses, and the forbs, the leafy plants with flowers and stuff that exist out here, plus the non-natives, the cheatgrass, the kochia, all the other stuff that we don't like to have in that habitat, but we've updated those descriptions. And we've even developed a draft mitigation program so that as we take out sagebrush habitat through development within the city and in the county, We're trying to offset that by preserving and enhancing properties in other parts of the county so that we maintain that habitat and the species that use that habitat through time. Next slide. Parks and Recreation, few tweaks to that. The county Parks and Recreation Commission is very close to updating their and approving their latest parks plan. And so we've got that adopted by reference whenever it gets approved. And probably the biggest thing that we've done is added in discussion and an area to preserve as open space in Badger Canyon. So did everybody see where the fire was this last weekend? Right, so across the canyon, on the other side, the north side, in between the houses down low and the houses up above, there's some property that's owned by the State Department of Natural Resources. And we're trying to, in fact, we just presented last week a proposal to have that land transferred to the county and turned into an open space preservation, kind of like Badger or Candy Mountain with trails on it, but more for mountain biking, plus hiking as well. But there will be some dedicated mountain biking parts of that as well. So that's something that we're hoping to do is receive that land. Yes, sir.
I'm just going to say, as you say, we need the county.
The county. But really, so there's lots of people that support it, like Friends of Badger Mountain, Tapteal Greenway Association, Runners of the Sage, Yakima Nation, the mountain bikers. Benton County is the lead. Yep.
Well, if you had like 50 people at the public meetings.
Future-wise.
Or you had 50 people at the public meetings supporting.
Yeah, we got lots of supports. The Hispanic Chamber of Commerce supported it, like really broad support. And we're hoping all that support moves us up to the top of the list. And then we hope the legislature figures out our way to find some money to fund it. Because the way it works is this: the state writes a check to the Department of Natural Resources. You know, they have lands that they lease out for like providing school funding and other funding for other state needs. And so they get a check so they can use that money to go buy something else that might make them more money. And then we get the property. That's kind of how it works. We also updated the planned capital improvements that are in the Parks and Rec plan. Next slide. There's an economic development element. This is that picture was a picture of a flaking facility in Plymouth that was built by Agri Northwest. So they just finished that last fall. And so there's a bunch of big storage facilities down there so they can flake up corn and then put it on and dry it. Yep. And then they put it on rail cars and they can ship it all over, primarily in the Northwest, but that's another value-added opportunity. So there's some plans that we adopted, the latest versions of. We also included an industrial lands inventory and the energy overlay analysis to complement the overall strategy. There was a lot of detail about stuff that was kind of historical. And we are trying to change the comprehensive plan from an encyclopedia that's an 800-page read to something that's a little bit more manageable with some pictures and stuff. So we're slowly working that way. So we trimmed out a little more detail. We emphasize agriculture, tourism, Hanford, of course, industrial development to help diversify the economy. And I mean, if you've lived in the Tri-Cities for a long time, you've seen that we have definitely diversified over time. We still have a heavy reliance on Hanford, but there are other parts of the economy that continue to grow as well. And then agritourism is a new area but an area of focus that I'll share some information about that towards the end of the presentation. And then one of the biggest thing of the economic development element is providing more industrial area around Plymouth because there's quite a bit of activity that's happening. Like you've seen all the server farms on the Oregon side that are going in. And I know server farms are maybe not the most popular data centers, but there's a lot of associated development and there's more and more interest in that area down around Plymouth And so we've identified some opportunities for additional industrial development in some places and in other places where we're saying this doesn't make sense down there, like right along the shoreline. And so that's coming out is what we're proposing. So there's a combination of a little bit more and a little bit less industrial. Capital facilities, just real quickly. You know, we've done a lot of coordination with the city so that in the urban growth areas between the cities and the county, there's a coordinated plan for roads. We've got all of the plans for school districts, fire districts, utility providers, what their capital plans are. We've added in some equity and environmental justice considerations into capital facilities planning, and then integrated the, probably doesn't make that much difference to you, but the county develops their capital plan on an every 2 year basis. And we've done a better job of linking the land use plans for the comprehensive, in the comprehensive plan with the capital facilities element. So they're better integrated. Next slide. Transportation, not a lot to report here. The roads are good. We are continuing to emphasize multimodal transportation, so biking, other forms of transportation, trying to look at habitat connectivity across roads, so areas where habitat can move back and forth without as much mortality impacts, and also just not disrupting their various habits, I guess. What I'm thinking about is, so we do a project up in Stevens County right now, and we just found out that the section between Deer Park and Chihuahua, or maybe between Deer Park and Colville, 700 deer killed last year. The highest kill highway in the state, from what we were told. We don't want to have that happen. There's not as many deer here, as much cover along the roads, but still. And then we made updates to all the different transportation systems. We did an analysis of all the kind of how the roads function in terms of providing growth or providing good traffic flow today and in the future. And they're all within the acceptable range. So next slide. There's a utilities element. We added new sections on wind and solar energy and made some other minor updates and included the latest solid waste management plan. So who wanted to talk waste? Okay. So you'll give you a chance to, if you have a question about that, we can share that with you, but otherwise, or we can try to answer those. Otherwise, we'll give you a chance to give some comments at the end. So the climate element is a new element, just like housing got a major rewrite and upgrade. This is a brand new element in the plan, and it's required by state law. And so we had to look at comprehensive plans, development regulations, regional policies, and strategies, and consider how climate affects all of that, right? Climate affects fire risk, climate affects air quality, climate affects water. I mean, it touches a lot of different things. We also looked at supporting reductions in greenhouse gas emissions and per capita vehicle miles traveled. This was all done as part of a regional effort in the Benton Franklin counties, I guess except for Franklin County, so Pasco. And so there was a regional element that was developed, and then we adapted that for the county. And we're looking at different climate impact scenarios and how do we foster resiliency and address natural hazards. And whether you believe in climate change or not, this doesn't, it's kind of agnostic towards that. It's just like, hey, for fire risk, for flood risk, for air quality, you know, smoke, pollution, for environmental or socioeconomic impacts, what would, you know, how can we become more resilient? And so that's what that element focuses on. Next. And this just gives you those hazards that I mentioned that we expect to see. Higher heat, I mean, we're going to experience that this summer, right, with a longer it's at least forecast to be longer and warmer through the summer, which is going to have its own risks. We've already, it's pretty early to be having a fire already happening. So next slide. So for the climate element, we've added some environmental justice, avoid overburdened community impact policies. There's a bunch of different climate resiliency tweaks that we've made to the existing policies for water, drought, fire, et cetera. And then there's a whole new section of goals and policies in section 2.12 that's related to climate. Excuse me? Yeah. Excuse me? Well, that's under the et cetera. I just didn't list them all again.
Okay.
But it is included in the an actual element. So I just didn't put them all in the slide. But yeah, heat and smoke. And kind of all that's associated with it, right? Like hot conditions, people that are on oxygen have a harder time. Hot conditions, people that have a heart issue have a harder time. So there's all these ripple effects from these health issues that that can occur. And so we try to think about all of that. So that's even why like housing's in there, like helping people to have air conditioning. Like most everybody has air conditioning, but you'd be surprised there are some that don't. And so when you have longer, hotter days and maybe it doesn't get as cool as night and the house doesn't cool down, that has effects as well. Yeah.
And
apartment buildings. Yep. And also like if the systems are not working that well and, you know, maybe people would open the door and it's a bit smoky out, you know, you can get issues as well. So there are things like how you can build a box fan to help filter the air. We don't get into like every detail of those strategies, but we have the broad framework and then those agencies that are responsible for those parts of the plan, that's what they do to implement and promote those activities. And then the policy element also has some implementation strategies. And it was nice that the regional group did that regional policy and element, and then we were able to just pull in the parts to the county that are most relevant. Next slide. So the wildland-urban interface. Does anybody know what that is? That's the area where the fire comes and starts burning urban area, you know, structures that are in urban areas. So counties are required to address wildfire hazard and risk in the plan update. And there's a law that requires new standards for high and very high hazard areas, which have yet to be identified. The state is working on some mapping products that will help us figure that out. But we've identified some policy updates and some strategies that the county can employ to better manage this risk and try to reduce it through time. Noting that there's sometimes no matter what you do, a fire is going to take off and it's going to go. We saw that here recently. Next slide. Oh, no, go ahead. Yes. Yeah. So the plan, it's not a wildfire risk. So that's smoke, air pollution, air quality, right? And yes, we've all experienced that if you've lived in the Tri-Cities over the last
most years,
but yeah, it seems like it's been getting worse. And yes, so it does include that as strategies. I will just say, you know, the county planning department, community development only has so much responsibility. They're more in, you know, zoning and permitting. So they make sure that people have, you know, meet the latest building codes and such. People that are going to be affected by smoke, that's where you're looking more at the public health side and you know, the community services around that, around public health. It absolutely does. Absolutely, yeah. And so we have strategies for that. But again, you have the service providers that are frontline that are working on that. But those service providers can say, look, we have goals and strategies in the comprehensive plan for addressing this, and they can use that to go after grant money to be able to provide more support to people that can be impacted. So this just shows you the area in red is like the where you have the highest risk of properties, and you can see it's right along the edges of the towns and kind of following the Horse Heaven Hills for the most part. And there are, of course, other structures throughout. So kind of managing the risks next to those red areas is maybe a key focus for the wildland urban interface. Next slide. Oh, yes, sir.
I was just going to say,
wind is a
really
exactly prevailing winds. Exactly. Go right through. Yep. That area. No, that's exactly right. Oh, yes.
It's also interesting because that map is also a major wildlife corridor.
It's a major wildlife corridor, and it's that area that we've identified as open space protection in the plan as well. So that's why, you know, I really liked what Lori provided for those. So what we've included is a series of recommendations. There are updates to the policies to strengthen risk management strategies, you know, like helping landowners know what they can do to not only preserve habitat, but also reduce fire risk. And that's kind of what that targeted outreach is about. The fire chiefs gave us a bunch of different suggestions that we've incorporated, but the bottom one is the one I was referring to. So you've seen the disced up, you know, areas along roads where you might have a road and then you got this swath of land, and then you got a fire break that's been disked, and you just got bare ground initially, and then it grows up with a bunch of weeds and stuff after that. And so you got to go disk it again. Well, there's some studies out there that show that you can actually just mow and keep more of the native vegetation, and it may actually do better at protecting against fire risk than churning up that habitat and then also you know, creating a seedbed for noxious weeds and invasive species. So we've got some recommendations related to that and some strategies for folks to consider. And again, the county is not frontline in developing a community wildfire protection plan. That happens through Benton County Emergency Services. But what we've developed will inform their next update of that wildfire protection plan. Next slide. So does everybody know what a critical area is? All right, well, I'll tell you what it is, what they are. Debbie knows. She could give the answer. So it's fish and wildlife habitat conservation areas. So think of like shrub step or sagebrush habitat, but also forest habitat, habitat along streams. So there's lots of different types of fish and wildlife habitat conservation areas. That's one critical area. Another is wetlands. So how do you identify and protect wetlands? How do you identify and protect fish and wildlife habitat? The third area is frequently flooded areas. So critical area also includes frequently flooded areas. We saw a flood earlier in the year, right, when the Yakima River crested and flooded parts of West Richland and in the county. So that's the third area. The fourth is geologic hazards. So think of steep slopes and landslides and stuff. So these are regulations that protect activities or regulate activities to avoid impacts to these different. And then the fifth one is critical aquifer recharge areas. So think about areas around a well. I keep hitting this dumb thing. Think about areas around a well where you don't want to have like a hazardous spill or something get into the drinking water supply, public wells or private wells as well. So the county has a code that protects those five critical areas. So we did quite a bit of work to update that code. We updated several definitions. revised the associated best available science sources, which is a state requirement. We updated how you rate wetlands and mitigate, and that's consistent with the latest state guidance. Another big change is we changed the area along a stream that's protected. So in a lot of areas, it's 65 feet or 50 in some spots. Is it 50? I think it's 50 and 65, and some places 100. And now we're proposing, and these are for streams that are like not on the Columbia. This is not the Columbia, not the Yakima River. These are like little streams that aren't in the county shoreline master program. They might be intermittent streams. Anyway, we have a buffer that would now be 100 feet on each side of that stream. And that protects habitat and also water quality. And it is the minimum recommendation for that. And then we've also developed a shrub step mitigation program that has, as I mentioned earlier, where we have land out in the county that we can try to preserve to offset for impacts within the cities and the more dense areas of the county where you're impacting habitat, the more densely developed areas of the county.
Are you not using some of that within the cities themselves?
And, oh, yes, I'm sorry. Thank you. Yeah, so it's development within the cities. It's a regional program. So all the cities would participate in it, and they would basically, so if I'm a developer and I'm developing out at State Patrol, everybody know where that's at? So where 395 comes into town from the south, let's say I'm developing out there and I'm going to take out 20 acres of shrub step habitat. I would write a check for, you know, $3,000-$5,000 an acre of impact, give that to the conservation district, and then they would in turn use that with the landowner and a land trust that we're working with and offset that impact on a piece of property out in the county. Gabby?
No, I meant, I know at one point there was a discussion about using that for within the cities as well.
Oh, to preserve, yes.
Cities.
Yes. So we have passed that along to the cities for consideration. We haven't really done like detailed planning of like where could we preserve those areas within the city, but they do follow the mitigation sequencing, right? So avoidance first, then minimizing, and then if they're not able to minimize and avoid, then they mitigate the impacts.
I'm just saying there are areas within the cities that are
protected. That could be also protected. Yes. Yep. You're right. Laura, you capture that as a, I know you've made that comment before us and then we've passed it along, but we haven't kind of worked that in the program yet, like specifically as a focus area. And so I want to try and figure out how to do that. Next slide. No worries. Next slide. So this is just a little more detail. I think I covered most of this, but we do have a working group that's been working on this mitigation program. You can see that representatives there. We're also working closely with State Fish and Wildlife. There's already a program in place. It's an interim program, and we're going to turn this into a permanent program. We forecasted where the growth is going to happen and the types of impacts that would occur. We also looked at potential mitigation properties. I missed an N there, I see. And then we're on our fifth revision of the program description. And the draft program description's in the technical appendix, volume 2. And then we're also reaching out to a land trust, and we've got one that we're hoping to work with. And we've also reached out some landowners that have large tracts of land that could be set aside for protection, permanent protection. So this just shows you, like the areas in green are habitat corridors. The area in pink is like core habitat, like maybe some of the best habitat areas. The areas in yellow are growth opportunity areas, and those are maybe orange is a better way to describe that color. Those are areas where there could be better habitat if there was some restoration work or enhancement work that was done. And then the tan is kind of other habitat, and anything that has a hatching on it has been identified at PHS. It's not a super accurate priority I'm sorry, it's not a super accurate shrub step priority habitat and species data layer, but it is improving over time. So over time, hopefully that will get more accurate. And it doesn't, this is just a map to kind of get you started. When you have a development, you identify where the where it's going to occur, what the habitat conditions are, and there's a very site-specific report that's prepared along with the mitigation plan if it's necessary. Next, please. And then this is a quality model that we worked with the Conservation District to develop. It identifies mitigation opportunity areas, and also gives a starting point for the habitat that's being impacted and the type of habitat. The dark purple, the darker the color, the better the habitat. The darker the purple, bluish. So you can see kind of areas where we might focus our habitat mitigation. Next slide. This is a breakdown of, just like we did for the housing and what the allocation for the housing, this is a breakdown of the different habitat types that exist and the quality of those habitats within each jurisdiction and in the county. Next slide. So the path forward on the shrub step mitigation program, we have some roles and responsibilities we're trying to nail down. We've got a pretty good handle on that, but we're still kind of refining that. The county will be entering into agreement with Forterra, which is a land trust, the largest land trust of mitigation, the largest holder of mitigation properties in Washington State. And we'll also be working with landowners to secure mitigation properties through permanent conservation easements, permanent protections. And then we have some tweaking of the program and the mitigation ratios and how those get applied. That will all happen through the end of this year. And we hope to be ready to go next year with that program, have it in place. Open space preservation. We've captured a lot of, we've done a lot of stuff in this comp plan update. This is a program that is in place in Franklin County, and that's where Greg worked before he came to Benton County. And so he helped us develop this program. So this is another way that we can protect open space, habitat, shrub step habitat. Landowners can apply for reduced property taxes if they can demonstrate a benefit to some of the open space priorities that we've established. So like habitat preservation is a good example of that. And it allows them to get a reduced rate for their taxes as they protect that property. Next slide. We've also done some other changes to the county code. We've added some additional flexibilities for accessory uses and food services at agritourism businesses. So think wineries, for example, or other places where you might have, you know, they're either producing or processing agricultural products. And then Damien and the rest of the planning team did a whole bunch of code updates, like little tweaks and cleanup stuff. That could be a 3-hour presentation, just going through each, you know, part of the code and showing what's updated. We're not going to do 3 hours. And you're probably already, you know, losing you a little bit with just what I've done, but basically, the reason that those updates are done is to comply with either the latest state requirements or to clarify language or to make consistent between different codes and make sure that it's clear about how uses are allowed in various zones. So anything else to add to that?
No, I'd just say that this brand of update that we're working on happens once every 10 years. I can't remember if Ben mentioned that, but he kicked things off. So there's, you know, a handful of years worth of state law changes that were going up, but a lot of this stuff reflects.
Thank you, Damien. So the county had, oh, yes.
No.
Yes. Yeah. State mandates that we revisit this every 10 years. So it can serve as a bit of a check-in. But then anything that has changed, we have an opportunity to exit. Good. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a rolling 20 years, right? So you add the next 10 years on. So in 10 years from now, we'll be planning through 2057. So it'll be 2037, 2057. 2026. It's good to have a plan. Exactly. Well, and so, and on top of that, like you may see, like in the plan, it shows you like this was amended in 2019, this is amended in 2021. So there's also an annual review and update of limited amendments to the plan that people can apply for. So that, so it's a living document, but the comprehensive review and update like we're doing now happens every 10 years. No drinking? Okay, well, I can't speak anymore, so I guess we're done. I'm not done. You're ready to roll. You're ready to pounce. Okay, give me this section. Okay. Okay, that's right. You have a 7:30 meeting. So we have an EIS. It's a new EIS, draft environmental impact statement, that's been prepared for the plan. The old one was a 1983 vintage, I think. And so we've done a lot of updates. We have some different alternatives in it. So I will just say that this doesn't look at every impact in detail. It's called a programmatic, which means it covers everything generally. It covers the plan for environmental review, and then specific projects will do site-specific analysis and may require an environmental impact statement specific to a project. So next slide. So there's a no action, no change in kind of the current plan. There's a aggressive growth with an emphasis on affordable housing in Plymouth and Findlay. And then there's a more moderate growth target with limited emphasis on industrial development. And I've and alternative two has a, that's where it has more industrial land being designated than alternative three. So those are the three different alternatives. This just shows you, I already covered this earlier, but those changes are examples of the changes. And then here's an example of the area that would be industrial. So the parcels that say 261, 325, and 158 would be new designated industrial. And the one that says 369 would be changed from industrial to open space. That's Port of Kennewick property, and there's lots of cultural resources and shoreline values there that's not really a good spot. I think they had it as maybe potentially going to be like a shipping terminal or something at one point. But anyway, we're taking that out, and the port supports that, and so do the Umatilla tribe and others. So that's what we're proposing for the industrial designation changes. Next slide. And these are all the different elements that we look at. I won't read them out loud, but you can see all the different things that we consider. Heritage conservation is cultural resources and historic resources. And then where do we go from here? Comments on the EIS are due by June 18th. Comments on the comprehensive plan are due by July 2nd. We're also, as the public is reviewing it, we've also sent everything to the state agencies for their review. So that review is in process. In July through early August, we'll be addressing public and agency comments. So all the comments that come in. So if you provide comments on the plan, we'll take those comments and address those. And it'll be in a matrix that goes with the plan that says, you know, updated per the comment, or we didn't update it, or we partially updated. Here's what we did. And then we have a planning commission hearing set for August 18th. Where they'll look at everything that we provided them, plus the comments, plus the responses, plus they'll take testimony at that meeting, and then they'll decide whether they're going to recommend the plan to the county commissioners for their approval. And then the commissioners would hear that in September. And then yes.
Next week, we'll have a notice that goes out that extends the EIS comment July 2nd as well, so that they expire on the same time.
Now, Debbie, that's time to push it off and not add more comments, okay? More time doesn't mean you give us more comments.
I was actually going to ask, which, so I'm not sure, I suppose I should know, which is the comment, which is the EIS review, I'm not sure where the distinction falls.
So if you have, like, in the EIS, if you look at the EIS and you say, hey, you didn't do a good enough job of analyzing bird migration, and you have some incorrect information, you'll give us comments on our analysis. Or if you disagree with the conclusion. Or in the comp plan, as you review that, if you think we missed something or we didn't emphasize an area enough, or so you'll give us comments specific to plan sections, and then you'll give us comments specific to EIS analysis sections as two separate documents.
You're distinguishing the documents that you have out
on. Yes, so volume one is the comprehensive plan. Volume two are the technical appendices, so all of the supporting analysis, and then the draft EIS is the third piece of the plan. So technically you give us comments on each of those three. Or you don't have to.
I was just going to say, more the policy stuff, comp plan.
Yes.
The actual findings and meeting the requirements of the environmental EIS.
Yep. All right. Who has to leave soon? All right. So are you okay if we let them ask their questions first? Okay, and then we'll stay as long as we need to answer the rest of the questions.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll go then.
Can I just preface that big, large number of these people are in the room are involved in one or two organizations? Yeah, but we're all here for the same purpose.
So what are the organizations?
Citizen Climate Lobby, and Sustainable Pricing.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And
I'm actually in Sustainable Pricing as well.
Debbie wears like six hats.
I am.
You can sit on both sides.
You can sit on both sides.
Go ahead.
That's right.
So, yeah, my name is Steve Gann. I lead the Joint Cities Chapter of Citizen Climate Lobby.
Okay, great.
So just to a number of comments here. Really appreciate the engaging with the talk on the regional bicycle plan. And note that the climate element of the comp plan calls for expansion of reliable charging infrastructure. I'd like it to encourage applications for climate dependent communities, low charging systems, apartment buildings.
Okay.
That's a known appropriate language. And also to work with Ben Franklin Transit, school districts, and city governments to write CCA proposals to fund the infrastructure new charge on the
Okay. Do they have electric buses?
They have three.
They have three. They've been
actually four.
Okay.
No, that's what I wanted to
say. Okay.
And then we need more carbon-free electricity.
Okay.
So it diminishes nuclear, right? It's not mentioned in the answer.
Okay.
And that's coming on very strongly now. It's confirmed that it's demonstrated in Nevada and Utah. So they can do this about anywhere in the Western U.S.
Okay.
And it might be
the other one. Interesting.
So, advanced geothermal.
Okay.
On that one, there's just a very small one. And on that one, you did have an energy section of animals.
Okay.
That was
okay. Great. Okay, solar energy, it's encouraged on industrial wind, which is appropriate. I maintain that solar and wind can both be allowed on other lands Ackland, which is 30, not necessarily on the place. And the landowners should be allowed to there's a story about plant solar farm in Connell, lawfully used to raise sheep. The sheep ranchers decided to have the land rent.
And we're working on the crosser by Connell.
Okay.
And major problem that identified of us that is the whole crop where it's covered many and egg cells on them got all the shade, additional shade that's supplied, and the energy that they pump into the building.
So nice.
That integration is out.
Yes. Yep. There's definitely an opportunity for integration.
Also on building resilience to climate change.
Yes.
My ambition is that I
land. Yes.
Environment, which is great. And to understand federal funding to get water storage. Like climate resilience to wildfires, I didn't really want to see what's ensuring all residents. Resistant to smoking and access to irrigation systems in their home. That's really a health district.
Yes. Thing. Yes.
But I think, just to get call for that and establish that.
Like support it.
Support it, yeah.
Okay.
It's not just air pollution.
Right.
Right.
It's a filtration system. Yeah. No, I'm familiar with it. Okay. Great. Are you going? Do you have written? I mean, is that?
I can send.
Oh yeah, yeah. Would you mind emailing it?
Have it down,
Email address on me.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, I think Brittany, you download those.
I just wanted to add my does it. Is there some way to make a requirement for having an air quality or emergency system done by the cities and counties first to provide it?
Yes. Yeah. It's absolutely possible. And I think it's a great idea. I mean, you need those types of facilities. Particularly, like, what if you have a power outage and a hot weather system at the same time, right? And smoke at the same time. Then where do you gather to? Yeah. The subway. No, that's hot and muggy. Yes. Yeah, you can get on the bus. The bus is air conditioned. Yeah. Yeah. You can go to a hospital. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, most of the, I'll say the newer builds, how's that? The newer. Yeah. Great.
But it's interesting thing because now, with this mobile virus, the hospital can't
Yeah. I do think, though, the county's emergency management plan or response plan does identify. And so we just adopt, you know, like that's not this. This plan is more of a general guide, right? And so that is more of a specific plan. But I do know there are temporary emergency shelter facilities in that plan. I just don't remember what they are. Off top. Okay. Gotcha. Okay. All right.
Yeah, I just prepared some stuff. It's in the high points.
Okay.
I like the comment about all this regionalism that's going on. I really want to say Bend County stepped up right away. They really led this little climate development action plan. And BSCG came along to help facilitate. So it was important. I now see consultants talk consultants collecting
for heaven forbid that should that, never happen.
That is truly, I say this is not as required kind of session in 2026. We're not meeting requirements. We're actually really trying to look at some new opportunities. I believe that.
Yeah.
I think we're on the train, and we're on the right train. The train for this start, although I didn't have a draft to look at, really.
Oh, you didn't?
Well, I did, but it didn't feel like I was reading a draft. It felt like I was reading the EIS, and I might have been.
Okay. Yeah, you could have been in the wrong document.
It's a monster, you know. But I believe that the regional approach to a lot of our problems is beginning to emerge.
Yeah.
I mentioned earlier solid waste. I'd
yeah.
love to see some more regionalization, but the energy piece almost feels like
yeah.
it almost feels like we're starting to think about this energy thing. We can't do it at the same levels, except
right.
we can't do it at the same levels. And it really is so integrated with the economic development. And it's just I feel like we're in a very pioneering approach, and the climate element is certainly being specific.
It is.
Touches all the obstacles.
It does.
Everything.
It does. You know, the shrub step mitigation program, that was not required.
Right.
So that was county right. leadership.
Took it on.
This group right here right. saying, hey, we want to do this, and they've been leading out.
I think looking at the partnerships, Ben Frank, the transit is an example because they're sure people who have committed to it based in schools.
Yeah.
They've committed to going, but they put their head in. And that's really still pretty tricky.
Yeah.
But we're talking about this yourself.
Right. We've
got to kind of come to some agreement, which direction we're going to go, so that all the jurisdictions can benefit, especially the heavy vehicles.
Yeah.
Because whatever Trump does, everyone else is going to follow in the 2 years. And other partnerships, I noticed that the university had this thing called Big Idea, where they would build data centers specifically to address environmental and energy analysis.
Okay.
And they would invite the local jurisdictions to come and use it as a study area.
Mm.
Things like that are the things that are going to solve our problems that we can't solve because they're way up there.
Yeah.
You know, way up there. They're using, you mentioned that I love a lower conflict opportunity siting be needed to factor in the county's commitment to protect valuable land, farm, sensitive habitats, and health, safety, and quality of life. Units.
Yep.
Beautiful. And I saw the maps are there. You generated.
Yep. Yep.
Except I don't see all the factors for the quality of life and local community stuff. A little more bigoted. A little more addressing. If you're going to.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
Be there. You know, at least what are the factors? Sure.
Okay.
And the data behind it. Again, back that idea, the big idea.
Yeah.
Did you get WSU was. A good this kind of study
yeah.
down the conference level.
Yeah.
Then, Tony, the thing I wanted to mention is you have, and I think it's a mandatory thing for all comp plans, but they say directive language for countywide planning policies in new years shall meet mandatory must we got a procedure to follow. Should means can expect it's reasonably expected that the only reason it might not happen is some special circumstances or something that might make it infeasible.
Yeah.
So again, nice strong language. I love it. And then finally, may its permission allow and implies a stated policy is advisable. May is a valuable reference term for emerging economic opportunities and long-term environmental objectives, like Steve has mentioned.
Yeah.
And this is your language then. So we like the names.
Great.
You know, I think it should be bold. You're not committing to anything you can't reasonably, I wouldn't say expect, is that all we can show? But something that really you should be looking at, especially you got the next 10 years you can. So that's basically, I think we're on the right train. I'm really excited because everybody, I feel, is really working at a little bit more of a regional level and then taking that and applying it to their own situation. I'll take the SMRs. I'm not sure the SMRs are going to be jurisdiction or city rich jurisdiction.
Depends upon where they get located. But if they're out at Hanford, they're
that's right.
What's it called? It's unclassified. So it's like a condition of use process, right?
Anyhow, I just think that, you know, I would like everyone to realize that we appreciate attitude it's going in. I visited everyone a month ago. I've been visiting Richland's a little tougher sales culture planning division and we talked about some element of that work on water. Unfortunately a lot of the city planning sessions are on the same thing.
Yeah.
So anyhow,
okay. Thank you.
Keep that up, you know, especially being
thank you. Appreciate those comments. Other questions, comments? Okay.
I can try to talk loud.
Do we have a microphone or? Yeah, go ahead, just talk loud.
Okay. Might be able to help. A lot of what I say might form better addressed to what the, so I'm just going to put it out.
Okay.
Sustainable transition. Or this future. Okay.
Yes. Yep.
Yes. And
yeah. And they're going to need power. Yes. Yep. Growth. Yep.
I just want this. I saw some. I think some talking people at the end of each. There's a lot of concern about data centers.
Yes. Yes.
I think they bought it. That's a lot. I just want to be aware of life is more transparency of citing decisions. Mm-hmm. I know there's a whole issue. You should want to keep the best, but I don't get it.
Right. Right.
People just feel like, oh, why did this sentence ring up?
Sure.
Yeah. Like everything. There's some.
Yes. Bombarded with that, yeah. Yeah. Right, no, they sure don't.
That's what I think. I think.
So FSEC does the Energy Facility Site Evaluation Council does the permitting of the larger scale industrial, but I'm talking. But you're talking about like just a few of them, like.
Well, that's how your home is still.
Yeah. So yeah. I was, that income.
From the county's perspective,
Just does seem like they're going to be a warm and
say on the integration side, PUD just sent out my bill and they're at 2026 PUD. They're planning energy. So this would be a better
Let's
go in here. It's not your job to figure out the distribution of the grid. It's really theirs. So
yes. We try to coordinate the best we can, but at the end of the day, it's a good decision.
Debbie.
So we've had a number of conversations about the program. It's not a simple thing. Areas in the county that would be considered bad. It's bad. It would also consider the importance of
habitat.
So it's a combination of two of the abandoned men and public worker energy industry. So there are all sorts of things to consider that because it.
Yeah, but right now we are not proposing an energy overlay.
Oh.
So it we did the analysis and we modified the memo to just identify that those factors need to be considered in future energy projects. And the county will use that information to provide input to FSEC for future projects. Or, but the energy projects are really only going to happen on the industrial lands at this point in the county.
That's very well done.
So you can do household stuff like small scale, but commercial scale energy projects are industrial lands or hemp. So we just shut the door rather than open it up. Other than, well, I'm going to say where they have authority, right? FSEC. Yes, exactly. FSEC is going to do what they're going to do. The county will use this information to inform those decisions for FSEC. Please call.
We never had anything specific been county for any of that one that studies this balance to make those category and making a decision how we want to.
The study wasn't specific to Benwick County, but it's certainly about it.
That study was very that study very
yes.
Yes, study, and it was just the first references were that maybe just the numbers and different things wanted something longer and just
and more expansive.
That study in the
it's part of our act.
It's in the volume two. Yep, it's the updated memo. So you probably saw an earlier draft of that version, Debbie, and now it's been refined in the latest draft. Volume two.
Again, now I hear it's not actually going to be.
There's not going to be an overlay. Other questions, comments? Well, have some soda or have some water. Those beignets are delicious. They have hazelnut chocolate in the middle. They're very good. And they're soft.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming out tonight. It's been great. Really appreciate your interest. Well, we're just doing what they ask us to do. This is where you think, right here.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming.